Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this podcast on collective enfranchisement. I have with me Mark Chick, a partner at Bishop and Saul Solicitors. Good afternoon, Mark.
Afternoon, Nick.
I'm a spokesman for a number of leaseholders living in a large block in central London. We are not terribly keen on the way the block is being managed by the current freeholder, and we are concerned at the number of years left to go on our leases, which currently stand at 75 years. As is common nowadays, a number of the flats have been rented out, and it is not easy to guarantee a good attendance at meetings of our Tenants Association or Leaseholders Association. We have learned that we have a right to buy the freehold. And can you give us some pointers about what to expect when we engage professionals such as yourself to take the process forward? For a start, is collective enfranchisement, which I understand is the name for the process of buying the freehold for a block of flats, is collective enfranchisement the most appropriate way forward?
Well, it's a good question, actually, and I'm glad you started with that question because that is the most fundamental question for you to ask. Buying your freehold is not necessarily the solution to all of the problems, although you've told me that you've got fairly sort of modest attendance at your tenant association meetings. You're going to need to club everyone together if you're going to buy the freehold, so it's a collective endeavour. The right of freehold purchase, collective enfranchisement, it is just that. It's a collective right to buy the freehold to your building. So the first thing you need to do if you're embarking on this process is to assess what the likely level of motivation is amongst the flat owners in the building to do this. Now, you've told me that the leases are currently 75 years long, so they're under 80 years, which means that for those people that enfranchise, they will pay marriage value in relation to the amount of money that they're going to pay to buy the freehold, but also they're probably going to be at the point now where selling the flats in the open market, people are going to start looking at that and saying that they want to do something about that. The average mortgage lender is looking at perhaps, say, 25 years on top of a 25-year mortgage term on top of 50 years at least of lease length, so that means 75 years. So it's a kind of watch point in the lifetime of the lease. And you're likely to see a degree of difficulty perhaps in shifting the flats. I know it's in central London, so if it's a good location, people will still want to buy there, but it's a known problem. So I suspect at sale, you're getting people asking about the possibility of lease extension. Maybe even some people in the block have done that. Now, if you're going to work out whether buying your freehold is a good idea or not, obviously it's about assessing the level of motivation in the building. And having short leases, or leases that are under 80 years, is certainly an assisting factor in that, because people will ultimately vote with their pockets. They will say, what is in it for me? If I buy the freehold, what advantages do I get? Well, okay, you're going to take over the management of your building by default, because if you become the owner, you'll be able to appoint the manager of that building. You'll be in the driving seat when it comes to the service charge, because that's something else that will be in your direct control. But also, you're going to have to pay some money, but in exchange for that, you're going to end up in a situation where you can grant yourself a 999-year lease. So if you, as an individual, participate in that process, you will end up, at the end of the day, owning a share in a company that owns the freehold. You'll end up with a longer lease, and you will have solved the problem of your short lease. So there's two benefits. There's the management and control benefit. There's also, in this case, the idea that you might solve the problem of extending your lease. Now, it's not for everybody, and I think the first thing you really need to think about if you're going to go into an enfranchisement is who else is there in the block? What are they doing? What are they likely to be? You say you've got absent owners. Is it going to be easy to get in contact with people? And is there a small but determined nucleus of people that are ready to get this off the ground? Because you need a kind of steering committee. You need one or two people who are prepared to come to meetings, to come and talk to us about what it's going to take to get this project off the ground. We need to see those people not necessarily doing our job for us, but carrying out a bit of liaison on the ground on a day-to-day basis with the other flat owners in the building. So if it's hard to get in contact with people, and it might just end up with just one or two people doing all the work, then if you're one of those one or two people, you have to think about whether that's actually going to be right for you. The process in itself, it's in overview, relatively straightforward. The devil, of course, lies in the detail, and I can talk to you a little bit more about that in a moment. But if you're going to embark on the process, I think you've got to just assess your general level of motivation. Your general level of motivation is potentially good. So if you can get in contact with the people in your block and call them to a meeting, you could well be in a position to proceed. So,
oh, that's interesting. Well, I mean, money is always a big consideration, or how should we put it, a worry. what would I actually be paying for and the others being paying for when we embark upon buying the freehold?
Well, I, once again, that's another very good point. I mean, if you're going to go about buying the freehold, obviously you know that the legal criteria for doing that are that you must have half of the flat owners, half of the long leasehold flat owners in the block ready, willing and able to do this. Now, I can talk to you in a minute about how the valuation would be structured and how you would pay for that, because the number of people taking part will ultimately drive the cost of doing this. But you've got to think about it in these terms. You can only buy the whole of the freehold. So having established that your building qualifies, having established that you're all let out on long leases, or you've got at least two-thirds of the building let out on long leases, you're going to a club together. You're going to work out what is everybody going to pay to buy the freehold. How are you going to ascribe a price to people's flats? Because flats may have different values. They may have different lease lengths. So it may not be appropriate for everyone to pay exactly the same amount of money. So we've got to look at that as well. But if you ask me the question, what are you paying for? Well, ideally, in your own scenario, you're paying for your share of buying the freehold. We can imagine that you could divide the freehold up into chunks. You can't actually do that, but imagine you could. And your basic cost of participating in the exercise will be the cost attributable to what a valuer might call the reversion to your flat, the cost of buying out the freehold interest in your flat alone. But, and here's the but, you need at least half of the flat owners to do this. But it's likely that you won't have 100% of them involved. So if you don't have everybody involved, you're going to have to buy the whole of the freehold. So there are going to be some people who don't take part. There are non-participating flat owners. So the next question is, if you compare it, for instance, with doing a lease extension, where you'd simply be paying your own price, the own premium that you'll pay to extend the lease, you're going to have to pay something towards the cost of the other people who are not taking part. And that's good news and bad news, because on a simple analysis, if everyone was paying the same and only half the people took part, the cost would double. But for enfranchisement, particularly where the leases are under 80 years, there's a hidden paper profit, if you like, because you only have to pay a fraction of what's called the marriage value for the people that are not taking part in the transaction. So I could explain that to you in a little bit more detail about how the valuation would work. But the first answer to your question is, what will you be paying for? It's the share of freehold attributable to your own flat, but also it's going to be the cost of the people who don't take part. Now, that by its very nature means that it is a bit of a multivariable equation, if you like. The ultimate cost for you, if you ask the question, what will it cost me? You can't answer that question until you know definitively who is and who is not taking part in the transaction. So it's going to probably break down into two key elements. The first will be your own cost of taking part, and the second element will be the cost of the other people who don't take part that you've got to bear in mind as well. There'll be a third level as well, which is the cost of the transaction itself. Because as you probably realise, if you buy the freehold, not only do you have to pay your own legal and valuation costs for the work that's done for you, but also you're going to have to pay a proportion of the freeholders' legal and valuation costs in the recoverable work done for them. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you very much, Mark. You mentioned a valuer. Do I really need to get a valuer involved?
Absolutely. I mean, there are lots of great tools out there on the internet. You can look on websites and you can see things that will help you find out very roughly what it might cost to extend your lease. But those tools are not geared up for freehold. And also those tools are not really geared up for giving you anything other than a very approximate idea of the likely cost of taking that course of action. So it's really, you know, what order of magnitude are we talking about? In a freehold situation, you definitely need a valuer to talk to, because that person is going to have to do an analysis of the values of the flats, which will probably all be different. They're going to have to analyse the lease lengths and also the ground rents that are payable. And they're going to have to do a calculation which takes account of all of the factors we've been talking about so far. So the cost of the people who are participating, what will they pay? And for the people who are not participating, what is the cost of them taking part as well? And so you most definitely need a professional valuer to help you with that, definitely.
Thank you, Mark. Well, one of our residents had been doing a bit of research before our meeting, and he mentioned something called a participation agreement. Can you tell us a little about this?
Absolutely. Well, as we probably said a moment ago, when you're about to embark on a collective endeavour, if you do this, you and a group of other people who own property interests in the same building as you are going to club together and serve a notice on your freeholder claiming the legal right to buy the freehold. Now, in order to be able to do that, you are going to need valuation advice, because you're going to need to put forward an offer figure in the notice that is served on the landlord. And before you can do that, you clearly need valuation advice. But also, more importantly, you're going to need to work out between yourselves how is that price going to be apportioned. When you get to the point where the freehold purchase is ready to complete, when a premium has been agreed and when the terms of the transfer have been agreed, you need to know what it is going to cost each individual person. And it's unlikely that the costs are going to be the same, unless everything is absolutely identical between the properties. And we just know that in reality that's not going to be the case. So the participation agreement will set out a legal relationship between you, the long leasehold flat owner, and the company, the nominee purchaser that you're going to incorporate to hold the freehold following completion. And it's going to say how you are going to calculate your own individual costs of taking part. And it's also going to need to deal with some other things as well. It's going to need to deal with what happens if, for instance, you don't want to continue the claim anymore. You might decide that you want to abandon the claim. What will happen then? How will you get to a decision on that particular point? What is going to happen if you need to apply to the Leasehold Valuation Tribunal or the court? Those things need to have been thought out in advance. And more importantly, you need to have a mechanism that decides on how your fundamental costs of participating are going to be calculated. So, for instance, is your basic cost of taking part on the assumption that everyone takes part in the freehold, is that going to be assessed by the valuer and put into some kind of schedule that says this is your basic cost of taking part, assuming that it's the value that your flat bears in relation to the other flats? Is it decided in relation to service charge percentages? There's no legal requirement that it's on any particular way. A standard agreement might say it's to be determined by the valuer acting reasonably. And then having assessed that, you also need to look at what the cost of buying out the non-participating flats is going to be. Now, as I mentioned earlier on, there is this concept that you only pay a fraction of the marriage value for those flats. But still, there is a cost to be paid for those people who've not taken part. And without going into the technical detail in too much, the element of the calculation that's called the term and reversion element is payable for all of those flats. So there needs to be a methodology in this agreement that says the valuer will work out what it costs you to take part in the freehold exercise yourself in respect of your own flat, and then what your proportionate cost of the other people who are not taking part is. And once again, that requires discussion between you and the other flat owners early on, because we need to know if you are going to share those costs equally or whether you're going to be deciding to divide them up in some other way, or is somebody who's in the building who's got perhaps deeper pockets going to contribute some more money. So there are a number of things that can be done. But it's very, very important that you have a legal agreement. You can't simply sign a notice where you're going to become personally liable for the cost of that notice once it's served, without having some agreement between you and the other flat owners about what's going to be done to cross-indemnify each other about the costs of taking part in that exercise. Or what's going to happen if the claim is abandoned and the freeholder comes after you for their costs. It would be prudent to have an appropriate mechanism in place to decide how you're going to share those costs on day one. Similarly, there are time limits attaching to completion, so you can't simply just let the thing run on once all the terms have been agreed. There's a long stop date of 4 months. You might be exchanging a contract. The company and the other flat owners are going to be under legal obligations to come up with the money within a short space of time. So there need to be provisions in that agreement that say that you are going to, within a certain number of days of being told the amount of money that you've got to pay, come up with the money so that the purchaser, the nominee purchaser company, can complete the transaction.
Thank you, Mark. Well, tell me, participation agreements are interesting, but how can I ensure the process does go smoothly?
Well, there's an easy answer to that question, I suppose, and that is to say, the trite answer is to use an experienced professional such as myself, somebody who knows what they're doing. That is clearly one clear advantage in the process. Don't use somebody who dabbles, use someone who is an expert, somebody who's a professional, such as an ALEP member, someone who comes with a track record of being able to do this kind of work. However, that's not the only ingredient that's necessary for a successful claim. As well as your legal and valuation representatives, you're also going to need to ensure that there's a good degree of communication between the flat owners within your building. And it's very important that you do enough research to make everyone feel suitably comfortable with the process on before you embark in getting everyone in and getting money on account and getting on with the whole process. So what we would say to you is that you should have internal discussions about the process, that everyone is familiar with what needs to happen, and also that you set up some kind of way of communicating with each other by getting your email addresses or by talking to people who know the absent owners or whoever it might be, so that you've got a sufficient amount of information on day one, so that you don't delay in communicating with people once the process starts. Because a lot of times people can take maybe 2-3 years to get their enfranchisement off the ground, because there's a lot of discussion about what people are going to do and what people are not going to do. There can be misinformation, people might give out information about costings which are wrong, they might give out information about valuations, which need to be updated because as time goes on and the leases get shorter, the cost can go up. So it's very, very important that the information that's presented on day one to your potential participants is as accurate as possible. And I would also say at the outset, whilst you might have an approximate valuation idea, it's a good idea not to give out any concrete figures because nothing will demotivate people more than telling them on day one that it's going to cost £10,000, let's say £10,000. And then maybe once a valuation's been done 6 months down the line and we know who's in and who's out of the transaction, that figure changes and people say, well, you told me a minute ago it's only going to cost me £10,000. Now it's gone up to £15,000. Why is that? And so people have to have an appreciation of the wider issues so that you don't cause people to disengage with the process. The other thing is that this is a reasonably technical area of the law and you need to ensure that everybody has the right opportunity to ask questions about it and that you choose an advisor that can explain these concepts clearly because you may have people who are not familiar with the jurisdiction. They may say, what is leasehold? What are we doing? You know, the analysis has to be right for each individual person taking part and you have to break it down and explain to people what it is they're doing, what they're seeking to achieve. And if you come to see us, we'd be very realistic about the timescales. We'd say this is not an overnight process. We'd say this will take a minimum of 6 to 9 months. And that's in a straightforward case. You're probably better budgeting on nearly a year. So really, it's just about communication and good choice of advisors and good preparation. That's what I say the keys to a successful process are.
Great. My fellow resident who mentioned about participation agreements has warned me that if we embark upon the freehold purchase and we don't do a deal with the freeholder, and there's a whole statutory process involved, that there's lots of traps and nasty deadlines with unfortunate consequences. And without expecting you to go into a great deal of detail, I wonder if you could give me and our listeners a basic overview of the process.
Okay, yeah, I can do that. I mean, I think the first thing to say is the things we've been talking about already are very, very important. So first of all, you need to establish that the building itself qualifies, that you qualify, that you can carry out the enfranchisement. If there are any technical issues that need to be looked at, those should be knocked on the head on day one. Secondly, you need to have a clear agreement about how you're going to structure your participation rights within the transaction. And I would say do not underestimate the amount of time that it may take to get the various parties to agree on the format of the participation agreement, or the heads of terms, if you might say, but the key points that should be included in that agreement, the points of principle about how the costs will be divided and some of the other things we've been talking about. That said, once that is out of the way, we're then on to the simple business of serving a notice to take over the freehold. So in terms of the process itself, what you're looking to do is serve a notice called a Section 13 notice. That needs to be signed by all of the participating flat owners personally. You also need to have incorporated your company, your nominee purchaser company. And once those two legal steps, preliminary steps, have been taken, you should then be in a position to serve the notice of claim itself. Once that's been served, the notice will give the freeholder 2 months to respond. So they'll have 2 months in which to analyse your notice, and they'll have certain rights in relation to that notice. So they will be able to come in and inspect the flats, have their own valuation report carried out, which will be done at your expense ultimately. They'll have the right to ask the solicitors to confirm legally that you qualify to exercise the right, so they'll ask them to do something which is called deducing title. When all that's been done, and assuming that's done successfully, and no one falls through any of the potential pitfalls in that part of the process, the freeholder will then serve a counter notice on you. And in the counter notice, they will stipulate the price against your offer, which is in your initial notice, that they think that you should pay to buy the freehold, and that will be the starting point for some negotiations. Now, once the counter notice comes in, that's a Section 21 counter notice, your valuer and the freeholder's valuer will go head-to-head in negotiations with a view to trying to sort the premium to be paid out, and the lawyers will start looking at the terms of the transfer. And there are some time limits to observe here. Once the counter notice comes in, there's an ultimate long stop date of 6 months after the date on which the counter notice is received, by which time you've either got to have got everything agreed, or you've got to apply to the Leasehold Valuation Tribunal, or as I should say now, the first tier of the property chamber. So you're going to need to make that appropriate step. And if you don't, the claim will be deemed to be withdrawn. So it's very important that you have somebody managing that process, and that person is ultimately the legal advisor that accepts the risk in the time-related aspects of this matter. You can't make an application to the tribunal until 2 months have elapsed after service of the counter notice, so there's no sort of
early Dawes application to the tribunal. But after that point in time, maybe 2 to 3 months down the line, things are not progressing quickly. You could consider making an application with a view to speeding things up. So, having gone through all of that, at the end of that process, you'll either have been to the tribunal, and the tribunal would have determined the terms of the transfer and the price you're going to pay, or you will have agreed that price with the freeholders valuer, and your solicitors will agree the terms of the transfer. Once those things have happened, then you've got what's called binding agreement within the meaning of Section 24 of the Act. Now, once that happens, you've got an ultimate long stop date of 4 months to complete. We wouldn't recommend leaving it until 3 months and the last day after the event. But you have another time frame during which time people have to come up with quite a lot of money. So it's important to be aware of those deadlines. You can exchange a contract, that's often what happens. But if you don't get locked in to buying the freehold once all the terms have been agreed within 4 months, you will lose the claim and you will lose the right to bring the claim again for a period of 12 months. And the same thing would happen if you miss the LVT deadline as well. So there'll be negative cost consequences. You'll have to pay the freeholders' cost of that part of the process, your own costs, and you won't be able to start again for a year. So it's very important that you manage the process correctly and you appoint people who are competent to do so on your behalf. But that said, that is the sort of A to Z route of buying your freehold. It's a fairly straightforward process in overview, but there's quite a lot of devil in the detail.
Thank you very much, Mark. And thank you very much for listening.